This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The original machine had a base plate of prefamulated amulite surmounted by a malleable logarithmic casing in such a way that the two spurving bearings were in a direct line with a panometric fam. The lineup consisted simply of six hydrocoptic Marzal vanes, so fitted to the ambifacient lunar wane shaft that side fumbling was effectively prevented. The main winding was of the normal lotus-o-deltoid type placed in panendermic semi-boloid slots of the stator, every seventh conductor being connected by a non-reversible tremie pipe to the differential girdle spring on the up end of the gram meters.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, taking the confusion out of transmutated lunar girdle springs for 4 years and running. Revolution Radio, the number one listener-supported alternative media radio on the planet. All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hello and welcome on WZZR, coming to you from Australia for Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com. It's home to fresh, relatively uncensored ideas and conversations in the chat room, and a place to get your merch. Awesome merch. The station is not beholden to anyone, but does require your support. Please donate or subscribe or buy some of that awesome merch I just spoke about. It's really great merch. This is show number 3. You can catch The Cave on air, online, and on your smart device. So grab an app to listen anywhere, or listen at home on a grace table of digital radio. I understand the International Space Station can pick us up. That's right. Why not join the club and subscribe to the archives? It only costs $5, and I think at the moment it might be free, so but don't quote me on that, but I think it might be. And you can access the archives on Freedom Slips of all of the shows by all of the hosts. And it's now running on 10 years, 11 years even. A lot of shows, a lot of hosts. I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land from which I broadcast, the Darug people, and I'd like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and future. Thank you very much. And thank you for tuning in. If you're new to this, welcome. If you're tuning in again, thank you for tuning in again. Clearly, I didn't scare you away. That's goodness. Now, this show I sort of outlined last week, which we're show number 1 and 2, is just going to delve into the reality that has been pulled over our eyes, to quote Morpheus from The Matrix. A great movie. And like I outlined last week, one in a long line of philosophical statements, Matrix 1 that is, that have been with us for thousands of years, questioning quite strongly the reality of this particular world. We're going to delve fairly deeply into a whole bunch of concepts. But before I do that, I want to say why I said, or want to explain rather, why I said relatively uncensored ideas. As we wish to remain on air, obviously, there's certain language you cannot use, full stop. It's just what it is. Those are the broadcasting rules. If you don't adhere to those, then you will not be able to stay on the air for very long. That's just how it is. Secondly, there's a certain self-censorship that comes into it. I mean, if you want to broadcast or post your shows or your content to platforms like YouTube and others, even Patreon, you must adhere to certain other rules, unwritten rules of the censors, as such as they are. And so we, Dave and I, also obviously, we're doing The Shiny Side Out. We had a lot of shows removed, just completely removed from our YouTube account because we apparently gave medical advice. We did not. We did talk about the pandemic and all that, naturally, but there was no medical advice. other things as well. We noticed that when we mentioned 9/11 in our shows, those shows would be demonetized. So if you don't really know how that all works, YouTube, Patreon, etc. You know, there's a way to actually earn money of views. You know, you have to have advertising, etc., etc. But if you break the unwritten rules, or the written rules as they were, but maybe not very well publicized rules, and you mention certain things that you shouldn't mention, that show is then removed, either entirely or removed from the monetary stream, meaning you can no longer make money off that particular show. And, you know, of course, if there are copyright breaches, then it'll be removed altogether, and you can lose your channel. That's a fact. That's what happens. So that's what I mean by a relatively uncensored idea. It's impossible to truly, truly, freely speak whatever comes to your mind. A true stream of consciousness. Impossible. Including, you know, swear words, improper language, improper context and content, if you want it to reach an audience larger than yourself. Okay, so that's what I mean by that. But I do want to talk about the nature of reality. There's one thing, and I've said it before, and I love this quote. This is the world that has been pulled over your eyes. It's the splinter in your mind you cannot dislodge. It's the splinter in your mind that, and I'm paraphrasing here, that makes you question everything. A wonderful, wonderful imagery there. And not original, as we've learned, you know, I mean, Plato, et cetera, have been talking about this kind of thing for thousands of years. And I want to today look at some of the lore that has come down to us over the generations, over the millennia, in fact, and how some of the ancient people, I mean, some of them are still around, you know, that's why we know about this, but, you know, how do they view life? Not our Western materialist view, you know, we're just flesh robots that, you know, when we die in the ground, we're just worm fodder. But people that have a more spiritual bend and think there's more to us than the sum of our parts. Because there's clearly something that animates us, right? And animate, you know, the word, you know, anima means literally spirit. So, you know, anything that is moving, animation, has a spirit, is the idea. And animists, and there are quite a few still left on the planet, believe that everything has a spirit. There's a spirit in everything, including things that we wouldn't think had a spirit, like rocks, trees, you know, etc. It's even places can have a spirit, animism. If you want to know more about it and be entertained at the same time, I urge you to watch Spirited Away. It's a really fantastic Japanese production. And it's not really just for children. There are many layers and levels of meaning in that show. It's one of my favorites. I saw it when it first came out. I think it was 2000. So it's quite old now, 21 years, I think. But I've rewatched it. I've let my kids watch it. And we love it. Something in that movie touches you, or, well, us, me, on a fairly substantial level. Spirited Away. If you can, Studio Ghibli. It's a Studio Ghibli production. It's really good. Okay, but let's talk about how, you know, people see this world. I want to talk about Native Americans first, you know, the First Nations people. They believe we have three souls, okay? And each soul has a distinct purpose. Now, this is only some of the Native Americans, of course, but we'll talk about a specific belief here. It's a Chippewa belief, I think, but it might be shared by others. The first soul is called the ego, and it is embodied in the breath of an individual. The second one is called the body soul, and its main purpose is to give energy and provide life force, or prana, or chi, even, to the body during the waking state. The third soul is the free soul that is free to leave the body and travel to other realms during coma state, trance state, and dream state. I just want to stay on this for a second here. Now, this is very... In some ways, this is similar to Freud's model of the personality, where you've got the id, the ego and the superego. And it's really, I guess, the superego, that would be the third soul, the id, would be the second soul. And then, of course, the ego is the ego soul, right? It's really interesting how, because the second soul has is the main purpose to give energy and provide life force, right? And the id is where all our instincts sit. So it's a very primary life force kind of element of our personality, according to Freud, right? According to Freud. And then the ego is, you know, is who we are during waking hours. The superego is the higher morality. The higher consciousness, and together it makes up the entire personality. And that's just Freud. Just it's interesting how that sort of overlaps. I wonder if he was aware of this particular nugget of information. Now, what they also believe, though, is that the dream world is as real as the physical world. And we're going to talk about quite a few indigenous people here. According to the Native American tribes, in dreams, we experience the shamanic world. They believe that everything is alive and connected to everything else. We can travel to different realms and even talk to animals, spirit guides, and our ancestors when we travel for dreams. Now, some of us are lucid dreamers. My wife is, for example, which is awesome. I'm not. I can barely remember my dreams. I've tried dream journals. Some dreams I stay with me forever. Most, though, I cannot remember at all. And I'm poorer for it, I think. Now, they also believe that it is not our bodies or minds that dream, but our soul that dreams and undergoes the entire experience. This is what Chippewa elder John Thunderbird had to say. Your soul dreams those dreams, not your body, not your mind. Those dreams come true. The soul travels all over the world when you dream. Our souls can also communicate and astral travel. Now, obviously, astral travel, you know, it's a technique by which you can leave your body, project your essence it's not for long periods of time, for short periods of time. You can travel to the astral plane for learning, for soul growth. You know, the soul in that state can also communicate with other souls, animals, and even other entities to receive guidance and so forth. Now, I believe, this is interesting because it's actually forms part of the hypothesis, and if you're familiar with the Shiny Side Out, you know that every full 100, we talk about the hypothesis, and next week, in fact, is show number 500 for the Shiny Side Out. Well, for America, it's Saturday night. Sunday morning, and for Australia, it's Sunday afternoon or evening, and the rest of the world is somewhere in between. So, I believe, and Dave, he's not here, but I don't want to speak for him, but we think that the only time we are free of this prison that we're in, well, remember, this talking about the panopticon, the black iron prison here, the matrix, right? Plato's cave, etc. is when we dream. That's the only time when we're actually free. So I hadn't learned about these Native American beliefs until after I had formulated the hypothesis around the dream state. And it's interesting, as you do expand your view of the world and your philosophy, it is never a fixed thing. It is not a fixed thing. I don't mind admitting that, you know, about 30 years ago, I was a born-again Christian. And it was a necessary stage in my development, I think. Didn't take. And I expanded my learning. And I learned more and more, and the world became a lot more complex as I learned. And it was very difficult to understand it in a fairly rigid framework. A lot of things just didn't make sense, you know, unless you completely suspended all critical thinking. So it's really important to keep an open mind and have your philosophy be ready to change. it's not a good thing to be dogmatic. It is not a good thing to insist that you are right. The purpose of a debate or discussion should not be to win. It should be to progress our understanding, our thoughts, to come out more than we had walked in with, to be more, to understand more. We shouldn't argue to win. I know it's easier said than done, and I certainly, I'm guilty of that as well. It's just something to think about. Okay, so very important for you to be able to admit that maybe you don't know everything, and maybe there are different ways of looking at the, at anything, really. Science, in its ideal form, is like that. Science should constantly evolve and change and take new facts into considerations. And even if it destroys old facts and theories, that's okay, right? I mean, we get to a certain point, and our learning shows us, okay, it could be this. And then one day something else comes along and we go, maybe we were wrong. Maybe we were wrong. We used to believe the Earth was flat. We also used to believe that the Earth was the center of the universe. And some people still believe that, you know. Well, that's cool. They want to believe that. Contrary to a lot of evidence, and I've called out people to come onto the show. This show, the Shining, set out to explain to me a couple of things about a flat Earth. No one has taken me up on that. And I haven't seen any convincing evidence at this point either. And then we believed that the sun was the center. Turns out that none of these were true. We haven't really found a center of the universe. And now there's even a new theory emerging that stipulates there is no beginning to the universe. Maybe there is no beginning, they say. Maybe there was no Big Bang. There's a lot of counterintuitive things about this whole Big Bang thing, right? The universe is... I'm making up numbers, but the ratios are right. I think they're saying the universe is about 18 billion years old, but I think about 30 billion years across. So the answer is, if it came from a single point of origin, Big Bang, right? Then how is it possible that the universe is bigger than it's old? What I mean by that is, so if it's 18 billion years old, then, you know, considering that, you know, Einstein stipulates the speed of light is the speed limit, it should be 18 billion years wide. Light years, I should say. It should be 18 billion light years wide. It shouldn't be 20 or 30 billion light years wide. So it can't be 18 billion years old, because the light would have only traveled 18 billion light years. But they're saying, no, it's 30 billion light years wide. So there's a bit of discrepancy there. We discussed it, and there's an explanation. I find the explanation thoroughly unconvincing. Again, 18 and 30, I'm not sure if those numbers are right. The ratios are thereabouts. So, astral travel can be done both during the conscious waking state and the unconscious dream state. If you're a trained practitioner, some people take certain substances to help them free their mind and explore beyond what we normally can explore. During a sleep state, many people have done this astral traveling, during the sleep state without even realizing it. It is undertaken by the soul itself to progress rapidly in learning. Now, I believe the actual purpose of astral travel, or your soul, or your being, your essence, leaving this particular reality matrix, is like a prison walk. I believe we're in prison all of our lives as we're born, because our prisons, our body, I explained this last week. A very insidious prison at that, one that we have no idea we're in. We just not aware, most of us, that this is our prison, our physical body. And the only time that we get out of prison, as it were, is when we dream. That's when our soul, you call it soul, again, call it your essence, energy, I don't care. I'll stick with soul for now. That's when your soul, your true self, can leave the prison, similar to a person in solitary confinement that is in prison for a horrendous crime and is allowed an hour or two in the yard by him or herself, right? It's a similar kind of thing, in my opinion. Right? All of this is my opinion over here, okay? Can't blame anyone else. But you can also astral travel during a wake state. Now, if you're interested in consciously training your soul to go on astral travel journeys, you can do so by using shamanic tools like shamanic drumming, breath work, and ayahuasca. It's the substance I referred to earlier. But again, if you can do it without it, if you just do the, you know, the drumming, the breathing, the dervish sect you might be familiar with, they try to achieve that trance state through a whirling dance. You might have seen them dance, whirling dance. Others, you know, do it through meditation, humming, chanting, whatever gets your mind into an altered state, really. And then in that altered state, can nudge open, the door of your prison. Native Americans also believe that life is one big dream. And that's very similar to the Hindu and by extension, the Buddhist concept of Maya. We'll talk about that a little bit later. They emphasize that everything is impermanent and we're all just living a dream. Okay. Now, the Hurons, as opposed to the Chippewa, believe that we have two souls. One of them animates the physical body, and the other one extends beyond physical activities. In sleep, the soul travels and communicates with other souls and guides. When this soul returns to the body, it communicates its experiences and learning through a dream. According to the Huron people, it is necessary to learn from these dream adventures, to unify these two souls and make the person whole again. Interesting. Now, there's also a concept called a spirit guide, and it seems that we may be able to contact those spirit guides through our dreams. Now, is that possible? Is it part of the great setup? I think spirit guides are a real thing, and I think spirit guides are working really, really hard to get us out of this prison. And just to diverge just ever so slightly from my main topic here, I do believe that people that have passed and escaped the cycle of reincarnation, which I also believe is a real thing to keep us here, in fact, have come back. I believe people that have escaped have come back to help us. Okay, I think there are different levels of help available. I think the astral guides, spirit guides are one aspect, and then the actual incarnation of I guess Buddha minds, Christ minds, whatever your specific bent might be, have come back and chosen to help us come along. Unfortunately, for the most part, most of their teachings, not all, but most of the teachings were corrupted and misused, subverted is probably the best word, in order to further the agenda of the parasites that are intent on keeping us in this black iron prison. Okay. Now, many people on their spiritual journey do a lot of soul work during their sleep, is the belief here, right? It is during sleep that their soul travels to meet spirit guides and seek soul lessons and guidance. Most of the insights and learnings come in the form of lucid dreaming. Therefore, in the Native American culture, dream work is highly revered. People are encouraged to remember the dreams and seek help from shamans to interpret the meaning of their dreams to progress on their spiritual journey. You see, I think that is true and false at the same time. So I do believe that dreams are very real. I do believe that you can learn a lot from it. I do believe that you can get help in your dreams, right? But I don't think that this whole reincarnation thing is here to make you grow, I don't know, into a Buddha mind, into a Godhead, into a Christ mind, whatever. Because, let's say reincarnation is a real thing. I think it is. We've been reincarnated many, 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 many times. And you look at the state of the world around you. I mentioned this last week. If we've really been reincarnated this many times, oh boy. and we meant to improve every single time. Can you imagine what the world would have been like, you know, that very first iteration? You know, the quagmire, the horrible mess, the hell it would have been. Yet most of our legends and myths and tales talk about a golden age from whence we came. Not a mess. So we have devolved, not evolved. Okay, so it does this whole reincarnation and learning and, you know, going on to bigger and better things for the human race at large doesn't seem to work. Individuals, I think, yes, sure. I think that's definitely happening. According to shamanic cultures, our soul can leave the body during times of stress or trauma. This process is referred to as soul loss. According to Native American tribe, the Shoshone, soul loss is a common cause of illness. Soul retrieval is a powerful shamanic healing technique. Shamans also engage in dream work with people to understand where the lost soul can be found. Alternatively, shaman or a medicine person would go into a trance state and search for the lost soul. The lost soul would be, you know, then restored to the body, and the person would heal and get his or her lost vitality and exuberance back. I wonder, and pardon me for again diverging slightly off the track here, I wonder if possession could be viewed in the same way. Let's say this is a thing. Let's say that you do lose your soul. You know, one of the souls that you have, or energy entities that live in your bodies, through trauma or stress. Is it possible, I wonder, for an entity to enter your body? Yes, I'm talking about possession. You know, there are many forms of possession, not all of them religiously rooted. Is that a possibility? Is it something that could explain some of this, that we simply leave a vacuum and someone else can slip into? A lost soul, a demon, being from another vibrational, you know, level, as it were, another frequency, another dimension. Is that a thing? Certainly something worth thinking about. That brings me to the Australian Aboriginals. And they're talking about the dreaming. It's not really a great translation, but I'll get to that. The dreaming is First Nations people's understanding of the world and its creation. Passed from generation to generation through storytelling, the dreaming shares beliefs that are connected to country and the natural world. These stories incorporate creation, rules for living, social regulations, ethics, as well as morality. They often feature characters who demonstrate undesirable behaviors and face consequences because of it. Good storytelling tradition. But there is a problem with dreaming. Because we think of things as abstract and closed off. So something as something that has happened. So the dream time or the dreaming, Westerners think, is something that was, you know, happened in the past. It happened and they're remembering it. Now that's really, really wrong. Let me explain. Now the dreaming or the dream time is an English translation of a First Nations concept, which has different names in different language groups. In the Valpiri language of Central Australia, it's called Chukrupa, also a Chukrupa, with a harder T sound in front of the J. In Matuwanka, a language spoken by the Matu people of Western Desert and Pilbara regions, like Western Australia, it is called Manguni. The dreaming is considered a vastly inadequate translation of a concept which is difficult for non-Indigenous people to understand due to its complexity, non-linear, and non-finite nature. This is important. It is non-linear and non-finite, which is really my point overall. In 1956, the Australian anthropologist W.H. Stenner wrote in his essay, The Dreaming, the following. A concept so impalpable and subtle naturally suffers badly by translation into our dry and abstract language. That's what he thought. A concept so impalpable and subtle, it naturally suffers badly by translation. Moreover, labeling it the dreaming may evoke fantastical or sleep-related imagery, distorting and even disrespecting the complexities and the importance of the concept. This is his quote again. These tales are neither simply illustrative nor simply explanatory. They are fanciful and poetic in content because they are based on visionary and intuitive insights into mysteries. And if we are ever to understand them, we must always take them in their complex content. The complex content they try to convey. Couldn't agree more. There's a very important concept. Every win. The dreaming did not take place at the beginning of time. This is a common misconception, okay? The dream time is not something that happened like in Western mythology, remember the Golden Age, right? And I think that's also something that we have lost in understanding. I think the Golden Age is referring to a state of being that is always, that we just can no longer reach. It is not something that we were in the past. It is something that we are cut off from, right? It's not something that is lost in the mists of time. No, not at all. It is lost because we're captured here, kept, I believe, against our will, in this black iron prison. Now, as I said, the dreaming did not take place at the beginning of time. Common misconception. It encompasses the past, present, and future. It is non-linear. It is a holistic philosophy that is grounded in the very earth itself. It cannot be assigned to a past people. It is an integrated way of life that many First Nations people believe in and live by today. Stanner, again, W.H. Stanner, coined the term everywhen in English to describe this idea. Everywhen. One cannot fix the dream time or the dreaming in time. It was and is everywhen. Always. But always doesn't really encapsulate it either. Everywhen gives it both a temporary and a spatial dimension, which I think is absolutely correct, at least in my understanding of the mysteries. Everywhen. We are cut off from the golden time. The golden time is now. Just out of reach, by frequency, by dimension. I don't care what whatever your stick is, whatever you believe in, there is a separation between us and the golden age. The dreaming, the dream time. Nirvana doesn't really come close. Nirvana is the absence, really, of anything. The great nothingness. But again, this is all semantics, and we're all talking about very similar things. The dreaming is shed through stories, told verbally. And these are very old stories. And they're often told to children by older people in the community. Just like many other forms of education, of course. And these stories, in the case of the Aboriginals, have been passed down through generations for over 65,000 years. 65,000 years. Now, I want to say something about this. Now, something that was brought up on the Shining Set Out many times as well. We looked at the transmission of information through time. What are the best ways to transmit information? What are the best ways? Language, especially written language, is notoriously difficult because it changes, right? Written language has the unfortunate tendency to be destroyed, to be translated into other written languages, and you lose the meaning of, or even context, of the content of the story. Some of the themes might survive, some of the archetypes certainly, but the overall story in its complete complexity is lost. So that's not good. Writing down things is, because it does get translated, it might get destroyed, things like that. What we found when we did the research is really interesting. Oral transmission of information, even extremely long stories, tend to be extremely accurate. There you go, Mackie, that sounds crazy. How is that possible? Well, it's all about the meter. You have, this happened for the Nordic myths, the Vedas, right? You put a poem into a certain meter, And that's you learn it off by heart, right? You I don't know if you ever learned, I don't know if any of you had to recite poems for school. You learn them off by heart, and you learn them, and you probably never forget them for all of your life. You remember them for all of your life. The same is true for children's lullabies, children's songs. I'm singing songs to my children that my mother sang to me and that her mother sang to her. And for all I know, her mother sang to her. I have no idea how many generations these lullabies go back. No idea, none, zero, don't know. Is it conceivable that they go back many, many, many hundreds of years or longer? Sure, absolutely. Because they rhyme and they have a certain melody. And you know, and if you change words or you change things within the song, then it no longer sounds right. It is no longer what you're used to. And it just loses its coherence. And the same is true for, you know, these long Vedic poems, epic texts. And they were kept in a certain meter. It's same or similar for the stories that have been passed down through 65,000 years. Of course, there would have been changes, right? But chances are that a lot of those stories still contain a lot more truth and a lot more content than any of the counterparts that would have, you know, survived elsewhere in the world. In fact, we don't really know anywhere else in the world where stories are 65,000 years old. We really don't, right? Our written history goes back, if we're generous, 10,000 years, if we're generous. When Göbekli Tepe was found, and it was meant to be, you know, some 12, 13,000 years old, we had no idea who built it, because there's no record surviving of that time, of those people, rather. And clearly, they were building large complexes. Not only one, they found another one now. Right? Nothing is left of those people. That's only 12,000 years ago. Only 12,000 years ago. The Aboriginals go back five times as far. 65,000 years, the stories. They trace, you know, trace back. 65,000 years. That's a long time. And I think there's a lot of wisdom here as well that we should not dismiss. But yeah, it's really strange. But the oral transmission of knowledge from mouth to ear, if you will, is one of the most accurate that we have. And it helps if you're illiterate, believe it or not. Because there's some studies done, you know, that memory is actually better for people that are illiterate. Very odd, right? But it's true, because I guess the brain gets lazy as soon as you have external storage is a modern term, but when you write something down, that's external storage, right? I no longer have to remember it. I can write it down. I can look it up later. We no longer have to remember stuff. And it's a very simple example. I grew up in a time of the rotary phone. Oh, Mackie, what's a rotary phone? Well, I'll tell you, it's a phone that has a rotary dial in the front of it, you know, numbered 0 to 9. And in it, you know, you with that rotary dial, you dial numbers. And, you know, dial numbers of your friends, family, etc. And you get a telephone connection. Now, I remember them all. To this day, I remember my phone number in Germany. It was 0 in German. I said German because I remember in German. 0-2-2-4-1-4-4-3-4-9. 0-2-2-4-1-4-4-3-4-9. Now, this number is 45 years old in my head. And I haven't used it in 40 years. Okay? But I remember it because I learned it as a child. And that number is forever imprinted upon my brain. So that number is served to translate as 0-2-2-4-1-4-4-3-4-9. That's it. And there's a certain rhythm to it when I say it. And 0-2-2-4-1-4-4-3-4-9. So I don't know if you can hear it, but I always say it the same way. And I guess that's the way, that's the rhythm or the cadence that my memory found easiest to retain. Now, these days, and that's my point, we don't know our telephone numbers anymore because in our phone. Our phone has all of our telephone numbers. Right? If I ask you, I mean, you know, you might be different, but if I ask you, well, what's your best friend's phone number? What's your wife's phone number? What's your mother's phone number? Right? You might know it, and kudos if you do, right? But for the most part, I reckon you just, you know, hit the icon that is that you've chosen, you know, to represent your mother, wife, child, whatever, and the telephone does your dialing. That's external storage. So by having the faculty of writing and reading, we have degraded our own memory. And our brain is an amazing thing. It can remember many, many things. In fact, it's one of the most amazing things in nature, full stop. Right? But we are degrading it by having external storage. And more so, in fact, I mean, you know, it used to be that it'd be books and you have to read the book and you have to remember some of the book at least. When you read it these days, it's all Google. Google this, Google that. Google is our new Oracle. Forget the Oracle of Delphi. Amateur stuff. You want an Oracle for everything? Google, right? Or whatever your search engine might be. Maybe you're still old school, you know, use Jeeves. Or Bing, even though I don't know anyone who uses Bing, to be honest with you. But, you know, nothing against Microsoft. But Google has become a term. Let's Google this, right? It's a thing. Google is a thing. You do. It's not no longer a company or a product, a search engine. No, we are Googling, all right? I'm going to Google that. And if I say that, then everybody knows what I'm talking about. But it's external storage. And worse, it is completely unreliable information that we're now getting on the internet. Unless you have got some skills in, researching things and you know, separating fact from fiction and have a critical mind and some education as to what's what, it's very difficult to know what's true and what's not true. It's very difficult. Because if you Google it, the wrong answer will come up as easily as the right answer, right? Fake news will come to you as easily as real news, as it were. There's no filter per se, and you know, fact checkers and all that. But fact checkers are also subjective. There's no objective body out there. In the olden days, when we had the Encyclopedia Britannica, I mean, you know, there was a cultural bent and all that, sure enough. But there were people that went out into the world to make sure that whatever they wrote in the Encyclopedia Britannica or other similar works, Knauer in German, that would be true. It's a true thing. We're saying a true statement. Now, is it given to you through cultural lenses? Absolutely. Is it completely reliable? Absolutely not. But it was more reliable than the information we get today. And more we rely on external information sources, right? Our external memory, right? And less and less on hard-earned, hard-won memory content. Right, really, you know, memorizing things and understanding them and knowing them. It's one thing to memorize something. It's a whole different thing understanding it and being able to explain it and use it. I'll get to education in due course as one of the pillars of control for this prison. But it's just a little excursion into that. Right then, 65,000 years. The stories may differ from place to place and between nations, but they have common features. For example, many are creation stories that feature ancestral beings who created everything, animals, plants, rocks, and land formations, and they moved through the land in human form. They also create a system of relationships between the individual, the land, animals, and other people. The ancestral beings are models for human and non-human activity, behavior, ethics, and morality. And I think that's very true. It's really, really important to understand that. Because in the Golden Age, in our actual home, from which we're separated now, I think ethics, morality, and the right thing are just the way of life. In this world, we have to be reminded, we have to be told, because we are made of gross matter. Meaning, we're not subtle matter. We are our vibrational frequency is lower than it used to be. And that's and again, another sidestep here, sorry, but this is really also one of the reasons that there were heretics in the early church, in the early Christian church, because there was a big schism. There was one, on the one hand, you had the Gnostics, right? On the other hand, you had the, not yet the Catholic Church, but the church, right? Now, the Gnostics believed that Jesus Christ could not have died on the cross. And they said, well, he wasn't made of gross matter like us. He was made of subtle matter. And subtle matter cannot be killed. Yes, he can suffer, absolutely, and he suffered horribly, but he didn't die. And of course, the whole tenet of the early church was, no, he did die for our sins. His blood washed away our sins. And the Gnostics said, yeah, his blood did wash away our sins, but he didn't die. He was just horribly tortured for our sins. But it sort of lost a bit of, I guess, the panache if you say, oh, he was horribly tortured. instead of dying. You know, it carries a lot more weight with people when you say, "Oh no, you know, your savior died for you." Oh wow, he did. Yeah, he died for you. So wash away your sins, and that caused the very first schism there in the church, and that's you know what led to the Albigensian Crusades, the extermination of the Cathars, you know, the Bogomils held a very similar belief, and others throughout you know history and time, and it was stomped out with great ferocity, those belief systems by the you know church and then the Catholic Church. If you didn't agree with them, they you know if you thought that Jesus had not died on the cross, then clearly you're a heretic. You know, you might as well be in league with the devil. Which, you know, it could be further from the truth. Now, that's what the Cathars were accused of, but of course, complete nonsense. They were not in league with the devil, they just believed something else, something subtly different. But yeah, sorry. So the difference between gross matter and subtle matter is its vibrational frequency, it's way it's made up. And like I said, the Gnostics believed that Jesus Christ was indeed made of subtle matter, therefore could not be killed in this world. Suffer? Yes. Kill? No. Anyway, this brings us to Hinduism and by extension Buddhism. According to many schools of Hinduism, the world is an illusion, a play of the supreme consciousness of God. It is a projection of things and forms that are temporarily phenomenal and sustain the illusion of oneness and permanence. The illusion of phenomenal world is created and sustained by standalone objects thrown together either by an act of randomness or through the deliberate choice of conscious will. From the human body to a giant galaxy, each object in the material universe is what it is because of the aggregation of things that sustain its current state. Change one of them and the object becomes something else in time and space. Thus, what we experience as our world and what we consider to be our existence are real in a limited sense and from a limited perspective. Right? Our scriptures declare that creation is the play of consciousness. It differentiates itself into diverse things and in the end withdraws everything into itself for no apparent and specific reason, because God does nothing with any particular aim or desire. And I'm quoting here from the Yoga Vashista. The world is nothing but a mere vibration of consciousness in space. It seems to exist even as a goblin seems to exist in the eyes of the ignorant. All this is but Maya. For here, there is no contradiction between the infinite consciousness and the apparent existence of the universe. It is like the marvelous dream of a person who is awake. Now, what does Maya mean? In an ordinary sense, the word Maya means trickery, fraud, or even deceit. Magic, jugglery, or witchcraft are different forms of illusion that distract and deceive the senses. The senses have the limited ability to perceive and discern truth, although we take them for granted, and rely more on the appearances of things rather than the truth underlying them. In the spiritual parlance, Maya means unreality distinct from the reality represented by God or Brahman. God, in his eternal and absolute aspect, is pure consciousness, and his creation is a mere formation within that consciousness. It exists so long as there is an experiencer distinct from the experience. Let me say this again. It exists so long as there is an experiencer distinct from the experience. Does this remind us of anything? It should. This really is the essence of the double slit experiment, right? So what's being said here really is that this reality is a temporary reality. It doesn't have any true permanence because it's in a constant state of flux, a constant state of change. And the thinking here is that the real world, right, the actual world, is permanent or more permanent than this one and more energetically charged in many ways, but of a higher frequency. So this world, then, by extension, needs an experiencer. It needs someone to experience this world. And this is really, this is funny, because that's exactly the same conclusion I came to with the hypothesis. And that was before I knew of the concept of Maya. It's really amazing how these things just fall into your lap. So once you've reached a certain level of understanding by yourself or with the help of others, all of a sudden another door opens and oh yeah, we knew about this. Here, this is what we call it. It's astounding. I had this similar experience at work. You know, I've been doing things in management for a long time. I had no idea what they're called. Then I started working with people that had been using these tools or processes, you know, for a long time. And they told me, oh, it's called this, it's called that, you know, three horizon thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And I go, oh, okay, there's a name for it. We call it this. But oh, you're doing it, so you must know it. No, I didn't know it, but now I know what it's called. Thank you very much. This is the same, right? Because I looked at why anybody would want to imprison us here. I mean, why is it necessary for us to be here? Why does consciousness, human or otherwise, have to be in this reality matrix? And then I looked at the double slit experiment. And it was clear to me that, well, the double slit experiment stipulates very clearly that the quantum wave, right, the possibility of all outcomes, decoheres or collapses when it's observed. And it collapses into this. This reality is the collapsed waveform, right? Our reality, our existence is the collapsed waveform. We looked at it. There it is. Well, we looked at it again. There it is. And it was guided. The creation of this particular reality is guided. And it was and again, the configuration of our biology, the very nature of the physical laws that are here or, you know, seem to be prevalent in this reality. They formulate and force a certain kind of matrix. And you know, we are being pushed further and further down into the detail of it. From our earliest age, from our youngest age, we are conditioned and I guess forced to believe certain things. And it's no good to believe something else, because then you will be ostracized. You will be exiled. We made fun of you, we bullied you. You cannot believe something that the majority doesn't believe until the majority believes it, and then it's okay. Right? So any of the original thinkers, and you know, there might have been, you know, these people that came back to try to help us, they're usually nailed to a cross or something similar, right? And that's just how we react to those people. I mean, the guy that broke out of Plato's cave, he was beaten to death when he tried to free his brothers and sisters and show them the real world. He was beaten to death. Now, we were never shown what happened in the Matrix story when everybody was, I guess, maybe given the freedom to choose between the illusion and the real world. We never were given that. We didn't. We didn't get to that point of the story, right? It didn't get to that. Now, there's another Matrix movie coming out. Maybe we'll get to it now. Maybe we'll see how the people reacted to the revelation that everything they experienced was a dream. Right? But that question wasn't answered. So Plato's very clear. Plato said, no, they're going to beat you to death. That's what's going to happen, right? If you try to, shake too hard or rattle their cage too hard. No good. So it's really, and again, like I said, as your learning progresses, as you try to understand more and more of the world, it becomes very clear that there's very little that you really know, that we really know. We have our knowledge is so limited, it boggles the mind. I mean, we think we know a lot. That's great. We know a lot of things. That's true. But in the context of everything, we know nothing. Right? We can't even explain the most simple of things. Right? Why do things fall down? We don't understand the nature of gravity. We really don't. It's completely mind-boggling, right? We observe the world, right? We write down the rules of the world. That's great. You know, we can go into the really tiny bits of the world and figure that out and cut things apart, but we can't make anything that's alive. Right? We can't take a rock and make it, you know, into a living, breathing thing. we can describe life. We know what the living processes are, right? We've got theories about how it might have started, but we've never started it. We don't know anything really. We are describing our world really well, right? And we are describing some underlying structures and processes and mechanisms. And that's good. But ultimately, we don't really know, right? Really don't. There's no unifying theory of everything. It just doesn't exist. And funnily enough, science is moving away from the spiritual, which is funny, because I think a large part of the explanation of what this is all about is in the spiritual world, right? In the world beyond our senses, beyond physics, beyond chemistry. Again, I come back to my initial point about the human body, right? It's more than the sum of its parts. If somebody is dead, there's something missing. We all see it. There's a live person and there's a dead person. And we can see that the difference very clearly. I mean, we would never mistake someone for the other, right? Unless, you know, they're really, really sick and comatose or whatever, or really unconscious. And even then, you know, we've got ways of finding out if they're really alive or not. In fact, the definition of dead or death is also disputed. It's really quite astounding. We haven't really got a definition for anything that holds water. There's nothing in this world that we completely understand. Nothing. And if we realize this, then we're, you know, off to a great start. We can actually, okay, no, now the learning begins. Right? Now we can try to understand things, but we can't exclude things. We can't arbitrarily decide, oh, I don't want to look at that. No, clearly that can't be interesting. Oh, spirituality, not really my thing. Or, oh, no, I don't really like physics. It's too hard, you know, too much math. We must embrace all learning. We must embrace the entirety of the experience, or we won't get anything out of it. We just won't. People argue between Eastern and Western medicine. Why? Use both. Well, there's the music. Look, Mitchell Bupp is coming up after. Please stay tuned to this. This is Listener Funded Radio. If you can afford, please donate or buy the merch or subscribe to the station. It's really awesome. And come and tune back in on Thursday morning, if you like. This is Mackie from Plato's Cave.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message. Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
we did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others...